You're listening to Freethinker Radio on 90.1 KPFT Houston, your home for uncensored news and underground music since 2011.
Hey everyone, what's going on? This is Derek,
Michael,
Johnny.
We're all together. We're here in Houston right now for Freethinker Radio. We do this every Friday on 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org, and on the Conscious Resistance. This week, we've got a whole bunch of stories. We've got a brand new interview with Patrick Wood of Technocracy.news. We're promoting an upcoming event called Crimes Against Humanity Tour happening in Houston on May 21st. And a lot more. So before we get into that, how are you guys doing? What's going on? I'm in person.
Chilling, buddy.
Finally in person.
Good to see you guys. We can touch each other. We try to do that often.
We're in the same studio. We're at House of J. That's pretty exciting. We're broadcasting on KPFT, the 5 o'clock hour Friday. That's exciting. We always love to be on FM in such a broad market as Houston. We got music we're going to be sharing. That's going to be pretty sick when we get into that. And we got an awful lot of local news this time. And I guess if you're not in Houston, the thing to take away is that some of this stuff is probably happening in your town. And if it's happening in the third or fourth largest city in the empire, I guess there's some dispute on that. It might still have something to do with you.
Absolutely. So we're going to get into that in just a moment. Again, I want to say that we have an interview in just like maybe 15 minutes or so with Patrick Wood of Technocracy.news, for those who know Patrick Wood's work. But we're going to start with local. And we've been covering, at least for the last month, these stories with Lena Hidalgo, the what is her title? County commissioner?
County judge.
And she is one of the youngest up-and-coming Democratic stars here in the Houston area, Harris County area. And as we've been telling you guys for the last month, her office has been under investigation by state authorities and I think even federal authorities regarding a contract for $11 million that was given out by people in her office. Now a couple of people in her office have been indicted. So now there's just more people digging into her finances in general. So we got two different stories related to her. This first one, Micah, you found this one last week, right?
Yeah, and I think the headline says most of it. But the thing to think about is it's 120, that's almost an eighth of $1 million, which isn't much nowadays, but it's still a lot more money than you probably make in a year, or more than I make in a year. and she's paying for a private, here she is as a judge. They get afforded all the county law enforcement that a judge gets, right? Think about that. That's tremendous compared to what we get. And she still needs an eighth of $1 million just to protect her until July. And now we're seeing, we've been seeing since before this contract, all these nefarious, looking like shady dealings. So I don't know. It's a huge step. I haven't heard of a county judge needing a private security detail in Harris County. I'd like to, dig into that deeper to see if this is unprecedented. I mean, I don't know. And this is old news. It did happen a week ago. But, here's a person, that's a Democrat that wants to pay a private security company an eighth of $1 million. And if we get a little bit further down into this article, I think there might be a couple of points in here that were interesting that seem similar to what the other story about when they passed to that new company. It did get some resistance, but it was a 3-2 vote. So, so she gets security 12 hours a day, 7 days a week until July 25th for an eighth of $1 million. Okay.
Taxpayer funded for XMI protection private company. And I wonder, I mean, do they ever try to give the people reasons for why they think this is justified? Like, is she under such a great threat? She's so important to the city or the local government? Like, what's the reason for that?
If you get down into it a little more, they do basically try to say that she, has been getting threats, stuff like that, and it does seem like it was kind of along party lines, the vote split, but there were citizens that did speak about it. And I guess this is some of those things that when there are people that have the time to go out and speak about it, it's probably good. I don't know. I imagine our listeners are widely split on this issue of whether, an elected official needs private security to the tune of an eighth of $1 million for a couple of months at taxpayers' expense. I don't know. The long-term plan is to have the Harris County Fire Marshal's office take over security details. So we'll see. Just another one of these strange contracts, that people, bureaucrats, people, elected officials, people in lower levels of government all throughout the country, are able to make these decisions. and you know, an eighth of $1 million here, an eighth of $1 million there, half a $1 million here. We can't keep up with it, you know. You can't keep up with it.
Yeah, I mean, here's another one. I think this was. I just want to double check and make sure, but it looks like this was actually just 2 hours ago. So when it airs on KPFT, it'll be yesterday. But yeah, it says prosecutors allege Harris County Judge Lena Hidalgo's chief of staff violated bond conditions when he voted to approve the scope of work for a $48 million childcare related project. And they kind of get into this. So this is one of the three staffers that were actually indicted under Hidalgo. And then
it's her chief of staff too.
Yeah, it said, it's her chief. Yeah, it is her chief of staff. The last name is really hard to pronounce. It starts with a T. What do you
Triantaphilis?
Yeah, Triantaphilis.
Something like that.
Yep.
Chief of staff.
Yeah, I mean, they had some kind of like conjecture about like whether he technically participated in I can't find the exact spot. Whether he technically participated in that type of meeting, which would have been like the I can't find it at the second. Contract. I don't know. Anyway, they're just.
It says they're trying to see if he violated bond conditions for what, you know, why he's out on bond right now, right?
Because yeah.
Because of the previous charge he's got for the indictment related to
shady deals. Yeah, and so exactly. He's in bonded, I think he's not supposed to, you know, sign any deals, right?
I had another point.
Require that he not serve any RFP or evaluation committee during the pendency of his criminal case, because it's a criminal case, actually.
So that's what it was. I'm sorry. Yeah. They're trying to say that what he did was technically not like an evaluation committee. It was like, says, oh, here it is. The bond condition set by the judge says he cannot serve on any RFP or evaluation committee during the pendency of his criminal case. But he's a member of an ARPA, different alphabet soup, steering committee, which is not a RFP or evaluation committee. So, you know, there's going to be probably a back and forth about whether or not that's true. But either way, it just seems like even after that happens, like.
So this is a person in a criminal investigation, and they're doing this, and they're contesting whether this was allowed or not. And the bond was set to $3,500. I think, you know, I'm not trying to say what anybody's bond should be set at, but I think if you look at that number and what some other people are accused of, it might be, you know, you might be a little shocked there, because I saw one that was just in the news on articles I was looking up, and it was $30,000. So I guess that's an opinion for each person on what a bond should be set at, but I don't know. That's
$3,500 definitely seems low.
Well, the corruption continues on the local level, and I do think, as we said a couple weeks ago when we were talking about this, that even if you're not familiar with what we just described happening in Houston, that because of these emergency orders that happened around COVID and some that are continuing on indefinitely, including the case of Lena Hidalgo, all kinds of politicians were able to get extra authorities, including being able to make contracts without the typical stipulations and restrictions and regulations. And so in this case, people are making contracts, getting their buddies, you know, friends, companies to get contracts, whether they're qualified or not. And they might get some sort of kickback and things of that sort. So even if you don't live in Houston, this is something that's probably happening in your area.
Are they trying to extend those powers?
I mean, they're definitely not trying to get rid of them. But I want to jump to the next one. Here's some more local corruption that I think is, again, once again, a story that does kind of indicate what's going on in major cities around the United States and really around the world, which is the push towards smart cities, increasing surveillance, this technocratic type of city. So just in the last week and a half, Houston City Council okays security camera mandate for bars and convenience stores over objections of the ACLU. And you see how they put that in? That's what I was kind of saying. It's like, where have they been the whole time? But they get to be in the headline. And I haven't seen them fighting against surveillance in years, but that's another story. Houston bars, nightclubs, and convenience stores must install security cameras outside of their venue within 90 days in a citywide effort to stop crime, says Mayor Sylvester Turner. This is because they're saying not just Houston, but the entire U.S. is apparently experiencing a crime wave, major cities seeing the spikes in crime. And so they're trying to justify, you know, putting in cameras that they say will stop this. And this is the crazy thing. 15 to 1 vote. 15 to 1. Only one city council member thought that this might not be a great idea. And just so we can make it clear before you jump in, Johnny, is just this is what it's requiring, that certain kinds of businesses, including those who are game rooms, sexually oriented businesses, bars, nightclubs, convenience stores, nighttime businesses, will be forced by the government to install security cameras within the next 90 days.
That look outward onto the street, to the property.
To look on the street so that they say to reduce crime. And then also along with that, here's the other part. It says the plan is to fine businesses for failing to turn over footage to the Houston Police Department upon request within 72 hours. So not only do you got to pay to install
it, $500.
If they come in and say, hey, we need that footage from whatever day they choose, if you don't hand it over, you're getting $500 fines.
So who's paying for these cameras?
And
who's paying for the servers to back up all that data? Oh, think about it. They got to back up the footage.
And how is that constitutional?
That's what the ACLU is arguing.
How is that constitutional?
It's a panopticon.
And it basically also is, it gets rid of any sort of like expectations, which is part of the, you know, constitutional Fourth Amendment stuff. Any expectation of, oh, you need a warrant, right? Because they're saying, no, we don't need a warrant. If you're a business and we come tell you we need that footage, we need it within 3 days or you're going to be fined $500.
Well, that's no weird. They're basically trying to say we're forcing you to buy these cameras. You're renting them from us. Therefore, they're our cameras. That's our footage. And I'm going to come take it when I want to. Otherwise, we'll be fined. I mean, like, that's weird.
Yeah.
So guess who's buying the cameras, too? Probably the businesses.
Exactly. You know, so there was one attorney at Savannah,
licensed to run it.
We have this attorney, Savannah Kumar from the ACLU, says, quote, the council demonstrated a willingness to push aside constitutional protections and subjects Houstonians to overbroad police searches. And the mayor said, I don't want to see any more carnage on our streets or in front of these businesses. If a camera can deter, find someone, get them off the street, I am for it. So there were a couple people that came and spoke out, but overall, like, nobody spoke up. The only person who did was Councilmember Mike Knox. He's actually for cameras. He just thought that, you know, it shouldn't be put on the businesses. He's a former police officer. The only vote against the ordinance said that the ordinance goes too far by unfairly burdening select businesses. And also at the same time, he doesn't think it goes far enough to stop crime where it actually occurs.
Yeah.
And this is the scary part. Well, this is the scary part. Look at where it could potentially lead. The statement from him. Huh. He says a lot of crime is happening in apartment complexes. We're targeting the wrong businesses. So imagine that. Then they go to like, hey, you need to install a camera on your apartment complex because that's where the crime is really happening. So, the chief police said this is a force multiplier that'll help his department solve more
crimes.
Hang on,
we don't have the funding for that yet.
And it goes on from there. But yeah, so that's that. And that made national news with some different outlets, civil liberties outlets speaking up about it, that tyranny happening in Houston, local tyranny. And I want to add to that, this apparently, I did some research into this whole program, and this is part of the mayor's, again, his attempt, he's saying, to stop crime in the city of Houston. Well, he announced this program back in February, which this latest announcement is part of. And I don't know if we actually talked about this when it happened. He outlined a $44 million plan to combat violent crime. This is back in early February. And the plan was called, if I remember correctly, One Safe Houston. And so, yeah, back in February, the mayor announces a $44 million plan. The council approves, and it's called One Safe Houston. I found the document. Let me just pull it up in front of you, because I do think there's one relevant part that I would like to share on the show that I think people should know about. Because whenever these kinds of things happen, so, for example, we're like, oh, my God, they're forcing businesses to install cameras. And where did this happen, right? Like, how could this possibly be happening? But then if we were paying a little bit of closer attention, myself included, we would maybe see that these things have been in the works for a while. Like, this is part of their plan that's been going on. So let me pull it up.
Coming to a city near you.
Safe Houston plan. This is what I found, is that, again, it was approved by city council, but in a section in this One Safe Houston plan, it says the following: the city of Houston supports the use of data-driven, evidence-based law enforcement response strategies. Accordingly, HPD will enhance our crime fighting capabilities by leveraging the following technologies. It says expanding the deployment of automatic license plate readers in high crime areas to identify vehicles associated with criminal acts. So that's the automatic license plate reader cameras that are on all the cops and they're around the toll booths and stuff. So just increasing cameras, to leveraging expanding gunshot technology, which they've installed recently in Houston. That's the stuff they put on the light poles that supposedly if they hear a gunshot go off, it starts recording, but it's actually recording all the time. Then it says increase community partnerships to leverage available real-time video programs through such as Community Connect, Ring, Nest, and other video security platforms. So they want to work further with people's Ring doorbell cameras and Nest Amazon systems. And then it says enhance the technological capabilities of the Real-Time Crime Center, which for those who've long-time listeners know that Houston is one of the cities in the U.S. that has this 24-hour man station, you know, like the things you see in the movies with the wall of cameras, the screens that shows you everything in the city. And this is connected to the Department of Homeland Security and fusion centers, et cetera. It's called the Real-Time Crime Center. They say they want to turn it, the Real-Time Crime Center, move it towards a, I don't know what this means, but a strategic decision support center. So some sort of surveillance, you know, grid headquarters. So increased automatic license plate readers, increased gunshot detection, work with Ring and Nest's doorbell video platforms, turn the Real-Time Crime Center into some other thing, install these and cameras Ring, on businesses.
And Ring is connected to Amazon, which has quite a bit of facial recognition software.
Their program's called Recognition with a K, and they're already working with police departments to sell it. So
nice, man, nice. Just can't go anywhere without getting filmed.
That's kind of an interesting vision. I mean, again, I do think that you have to acknowledge that we're at a place, and it's been this way for a little while, but it's becoming more and more clear and maybe more pervasive, that when we come into the city to a certain degree, you're stepping into the ring of 10,000 plus cameras that are connected to the Department of Homeland Security that the city of Houston's been installing in recent years, that there's facial recognition cameras, there's gunshot detection cameras, that the businesses have cameras. You know, you have to accept that when you're in the city space.
Yeah.
For the moment, you know, and that's, I mean,
I wonder how it's going to tie into the future of Houston when you really picture how a lot of people have, how a lot of the politicians have talked about it as being a smart city, you know, first on 5G and all those kinds of things, saying, you know, we're going to be ahead of the curve with, you know, smart driving cars. And clearly, part of those kinds of things have been laid out to where it's like technologies that are talking to each other constantly. So like you pointed out, there's going to be technology on the light poles, mm-hmm. and there's going to be technology, you know, on the front of businesses and things. So who knows what kind of like interworkings those could eventually build into, but it is kind of 1984, you know, you got to find that little corner of your room where you can write in your notebook and no one will see you.
What do you think about that, Micah? Just the city council 15-1 vote. I mean, we've been fighting the surveillance in the city for a long time.
I'm surprised that it's so pronounced that way. I thought there might be more people that remembered the battle over the cameras downtown in general and how people felt about that. And I thought maybe there would be more pushback just from kind of like free market individuals thinking that the government doesn't really need to tell you how to spend your money, because if they do, is it really your money? You know? So I'm surprised we didn't get any like pushback, at least, no. You know,
the other thing is like cameras. Like I thought that cop earlier was going to say like cameras don't stop crime. They don't stop crime. They record crime. You know,
we need to put more cameras elsewhere.
Yeah. He needs to know, like, his solution is like cameras. I'm like, unless the camera has like some kind of a cartoonish grappling net, you're not going to catch anybody with the camera, or like, you know, if somebody wears a mask, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, you're listening to Freethinker Radio, guys. We do this every week on 90.1 KPFT Houston. We've been discussing this new measure passed by the Houston City Council, which in less than 90 days now, because this was just about a week and a half ago, businesses will be required to install cameras and turn over the footage within 72 hours when requested by police, or face $500 fines. $500 fines also for refusing to install the cameras in the first place.
From what I understand, Ring already has these agreements in place.
Yep.
So, I mean, a lot of the cities already, this information is available, you know, and it's, I guess it's a strange thing, right? Because the cameras have helped in a lot of ways to stop things like police brutality, not necessarily these cameras, but they've helped to stop things like that and to, you know, blow the whistle on things in Iraq and other places, you know? So it's difficult to, to say what is so particularly intrusive about it. Obviously, the being forced to buy cameras and have them point all the way to the property line from the front of your building. So you have to arrange them in a certain way, and you have to have enough cameras. And then you have to store that data and have it available and worry about it. Obviously, that's a way that it's intrusive, but I'm not sure that that's the only way. But I would I would expect at least pushback on that front, if nothing else. I mean, yeah, it's one thing if a business chooses to have cameras. Now, choosing to have a camera, you might choose to have the camera on your cash register.
Yeah,
you know, not at your front door. I don't know.
It would be nice if there was more pushback, but we're going to continue to talk about that. And I mean, that's a new reality coming to Houston in the next 90 days. Let's go ahead and jump forward in related story. I wanted to share a interview that we have. We shared on last week's show an interview with the organizers of the Crimes Against Humanity Tour, crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. And it's four different presenters, Dr. Judy Mikovits, Dr. Richard Fleming, Reinhard Fulmich from Germany, and the guest we're about to hear from, Patrick Wood, who is a writer-investigator who's been investigating technocracy for decades now. And it's very much about what we were just discovering, this growth of surveillance technology and how that changes our world and what that means. And he's going to be sharing just a little bit about his presentation in this interview we're going to share here. And again, it's Crimes Against Humanity Tour. It's coming to 9 cities in the United States, including Houston, May 21st. And if you want to check that out, tell them that Freethinker Radio sent you. So go ahead and check out this interview with Patrick Wood. We'll be right back. And stay tuned. This is Freethinker Radio. And you are listening to Patrick Wood of Technocracy News for the Crimes Against Humanity Tour. In just a moment.
KPFT!
It's about to start playing there.
Maybe we should get into some comments when we come back on.
Yeah, definitely. We want to hear from the comments. We appreciate
this guy from Alabama everybody. Here at the end is talking about the Panopticon.
Let's get a viewer comment while we wait for this. The video should just be popping up any second, so hopefully it doesn't cut us off here. But it says, these manner of surveillance is in my small town in Alabama. Big brothers on every corner, intersection, and even high-speed cameras and guardrails. I was told by a city employee that the cops watch the wall of cameras and will call for a car to apprehend someone who has been seen with a beer in their hand while driving and, of course, speeding. Ooh. Yeah, I mean, I think it is right that this is happening in small towns all over the place. It's not just the big cities like Houston. I mean, Houston is kind of a major city. I appreciate that comment, Barbara, because it's important for people to realize that some people do think they're not in a major city, so they'll never see something like this happen. But clearly, it is happening in different parts of the United States and the Western world in general. It's not always the big cities. Sometimes even the small towns, what they get, the Humvees and the Bearcats and the...
Yeah, military equipment.
All the military equipment and toys.
Equipment, Afghanistan equipment. Because, you know, they might need it to stop a speeder or maybe someone robbed the bank or something. So, one thing, you know, it's been a joy to be on KPFT. One of the things we do is share the music. I want to make sure we take a chance now to shout out where they can send the music. You can send us links on even our Facebook page, Freethinker Radio. You can reach out to any of us on any of the platforms and send us links to music that you enjoy that's underground. Or if you're involved in a band, you don't have to even be in a band. If you just discovered something that you think speaks to, you know, the philosophy and the ideas that we're speaking to, we would feel super connected if you shared music with us. So that's what we do on a weekly basis is share music. You can message us at visionarynoise@gmail.com. You could message us on the Facebook page. We're about to have this video.
All right. Well, really? Yeah, Mike is right. We definitely want to feature all kinds of music. We are going to have some music coming up on the show. But without further ado, let's check out this talk with Patrick Wood about the Crimes Against Humanity Tour. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Conscious Resistance and Freethinker Radio. I'm talking with Patrick Wood, who is an author, an investigator, researcher that I've been following for a number of years now. And it's somebody that I think you need to get familiar with, especially those of you who are going to be listening from the Houston area. Even if you're listening from outside the Houston area, it might be worth making a trip to Houston for the Crimes Against Humanity Tour, which I recently told you about is happening May 21st in Houston in the North Houston area in the Woodlands. And there are going to be four different speakers throughout the entire day. You can find this at crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. But today, Patrick is going to tell us a little bit about his work, what he's going to be focused on for the event, and maybe give some encouragement for those who are listening who might not be familiar. I know there'll be some listening who some of these topics might be brand new to them. But first of all, Patrick, thank you so much for taking some time to talk to my audience. And we're excited to have you in Houston.
Yeah, my pleasure. Good to be in Houston virtually.
Yeah, well, we look forward to having you in Houston next month. And I'm excited about that, connecting in person. I will be at the event doing some coverage as well. And let's just get into it. Tell everybody a little bit about your history, your work, and you know, what got you to the point where you're doing this tour across the United States.
Right. Well, I've been working on studying and writing about globalization ever since the mid-1970s. And that's taken a lot of twists and turns along the way. But in early 73, actually, in particular, that was the year that really created the kind of the genesis for modern globalization. There were significant changes in the early 70s that the global elite made they took some different strategies in hand. And when the original organization called the Trilateral Commission back in those days was formed by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, they set out a goal for themselves. This is their language, to create a new international economic order. George Bush later called that the New World Order. And then we've seen other people along the way, politicians, refer to the New World Order. And we have, of course, in modern day, we have the World Economic Forum talking about the Great Reset, which is going to bring the New World Order. This is all the same thread going all the way back to 1973. And so this is what I've been following all these years. And when I discovered historic technocracy about 12, 13 years ago, I knew there was a connection immediately because it was the only economic system in the history of the world that had been modeled from scratch. And where it came from was Columbia University in 1932, actually. Scientists and engineers in the heat of the Great Depression said, we can do better. And so they set about to create a brand new economic system. It wasn't a price-based economic system that we know today, like supply and demand and prices going up and down and so on. But it was a resource-based economic system where they would control the resources and they would control the consumption of the resources. This is exactly what we see today in the modern day now. We see this in the form of, for instance, sustainable development at the United Nations. That's a resource-based economic system. This is what Klaus Schwab at the World Economic Forum talks about, a resource-based economic system. In fact, Schwab says, by 1930, you will own nothing and be happy. Well, obviously, somebody needs to own something and everything, but it's not going to be you, according to him. It's not going to be you and me. We will, I guess, rent everything if we can. And, you know, somehow he says we're going to be happy. I don't know how that's going to work out. I think it's going to work out pretty poorly. But this has been going on for a very long time. And, you know, I what I bring it to the table, at least in this particular meeting, is that all of the planning that took place between 1973 and say 2020 was actualized in 2020 with the release of the COVID pandemic. I've written about this quite a bit on my website, technocracy.news. I've also got two books in the can, as you know, in print on technocracy as well. And I would argue very, very pointedly that the global elite that represent this whole new economic system, we're in a position to be able to spring the trap finally and say, let's get it done. You know, let's go for it. And this was the more or less the declaration of war on the world, in my opinion, to take the whole rest of the world system down in order for technocracy, you can call it whatever you want, technocracy or the Great Reset or the Fourth Industrial Revolution. There's all kinds of terms that surround this, but they're basically all the same. This was the declaration of war on the world, that the world is now in their capture. Well, that's debatable right now, whether it is or not, but they think it is, and they think they're going to move forward with this and take over the planet. So there's been some interesting twists and turns along the way, but that's kind of it in a nutshell. And the question is, I guess for this conference is, has crimes against humanity been committed with the whole pandemic, COVID debacle? We argue, yes, it has. And I gave testimony at the grand jury, as you know, I think on two different days that Reiner Fumisch put on or orchestrated, organized. And for all of the 175 people, I think, that he interviewed for that whole series, the aspect that I brought was to bring in the historical perspective and to show and to demonstrate how this has been, the whole thing has been in planning for a very long time. And now we're just seeing the real manifestation of it. The teeth have come out, war has been declared, and unfortunately for planet Earth, or, well, the people on planet Earth, in order for Klaus Schwab to affect the Great Reset, they basically have to take down the current economic systems. They won't die, refuses to die. And so we see this happening with the beginning of COVID in 2020. The global economic system is absolute shambles right now. I mean shambles. It's just a tatters. The supply chain is breaking everywhere. We've got food shortages. We've got inflation going on. We've got, you know, tankers, some tankers even that are just still sitting in the middle of the ocean. They don't know where to go. The global economic system is just a train wreck right now. And I believe this is a direct assault by these people that are promoting this crazy sustainable development agenda. We know it, by the way, by names in our country. Green New Deal is a big one that came in with AOC and Senator Markey a few years ago. Crazy as it is, it's being promoted by President Biden right now like crazy. He talks about Build Back Better. The only time I've ever heard anybody say Build Back Better is when their house burned down a couple of years ago and they decided, hey, we got money now from insurance. Let's build back better. that's always a great feeling. We're going to build back better, honey. But the part of burning the house down, I don't like.
if I could just cut in for a moment, I want to, because you're sharing a lot of really good information that I think some of the audience is going to be familiar with. And again, the audience who will be listening on KPFT are the kind of people who might be even supporters of, or at least maybe they believe they're supporters of what they've been sold is the Green New Deal, we could say. But what would you say to somebody hearing this who perhaps is curious about things like technocracy? They're curious in, you know, about this event in general. They might even be open to attending. But at the same time, some of the things you're saying, like, oh, the United Nations is not somebody we should trust. The World Economic Forum is not someone we should trust. Sustainability, you know, these sorts of things that a lot of the audience in Houston who probably consider themselves progressive perhaps support these things because they have bought the sort of surface level meaning of them. So can you talk a little bit to that about some people who maybe might be skeptical from what they're hearing from you?
I really can. The policies that have been presented by this ultra progressive crowd of sustainable development, the United Nations, technocracy, technocrats, and so on, it sounds good. I'll admit that. There's lots of carrots that are presented, you know, like, doesn't it sound good? You know, ending poverty everywhere and education for everyone and, you know, decent places to live. I mean, these are all noble goals for any organization. And heaven knows we have enough poverty on planet Earth. We don't want any more. Nobody wants anybody to be poor, I don't think. I don't. I wish everybody could, you know, have a job. I do. But the policies that have been presented always turn out sour. They end up doing more destruction typically than they do good. And I give you a good case in point. Energy. Alternative energy replacing fossil fuel energy was very short-sighted. Many countries are suffering under this now. And when they got rid of their old-fashioned, if you will, fossil fuel energies, coal, natural gas, and oil, and so on, implemented windmills and solar panels and things like that, there wasn't enough energy to keep the system at the same level of reliability that there was before. So all of a sudden, some countries are dealing with blackouts. They're dealing with brownouts because the sun doesn't shine all the time and the wind doesn't blow all the time. And especially at night, the sun doesn't shine. There's not enough battery storage to put every, you know, put all the daytime energy into to make everything run at night. And so rates have gone up, energy rates have gone up all around the world because of these policies. And we're now suffering energy shortages that nobody ever conceived would have been possible 20, 30 years ago. Texas just had, remember a big event, was it last year, 2 years ago, with cold weather and the power grid just went haywire, completely haywire. Part of that was a result of having too much alternative energy in the mix of your power structure. Well, another good example is food. Agricultural land policies, agricultural policies. Food prices right now and food shortages are going up like crazy. Nobody anticipated this several years ago, but the handwriting was kind of on the wall. You keep pushing this, it's going to happen. Now we're suffering food prices that are in some cases double what they were before. I remember, you know, a few years ago, you could buy a good choice grade ribeye steak for $10 a pound. Now you can't touch it for $20 a pound. So here's my point. For any progressives that would be listening to this, you know, I'm not against you, and I'm not against, you know, necessarily everything that you do, but consider this. You suffer at the grocery store just like I do. And you suffer at the gas pump just like I do. If you don't like that, you have to consider the policies that got you to that point where we're suffering these things. And these are the biggest problems on Americans' mind. And I'm telling you, it cuts through the Democrat-Republican Party equally at this point. People are fed up with high gas prices. They're fed up with rising food prices. They're scared to death of having a new monetary system thrown on them that they know nothing about, but it's being promised by, even by the president of our country. We're going to have a new digital currency system in America. What does that mean for us? Are we all going to be broke? Are we all going to be rich? I mean, you know, there's lots of uncertainty and fear. This stuff, the results of these policies are no respecters of your political ideology. They're just not. It will hurt all of us in the end. And we need to collectively say, no, we're not going to do this anymore.
Absolutely. Well, let's continue. We're talking with Patrick Wood of technocracy.news. In a moment, we're going to tell you more about the event that is happening in May. Patrick, along with Dr. Judy Mikovits and a couple of other speakers, are coming to Houston, as well as 8 other locations around the United States. They'll be in Houston May 21st. You can find that at crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. Patrick, tell us a little bit more about your website, and I know you're an author as well. Before we get back to the event itself, tell us a bit about what people can expect to find in your books and your website.
Well, everything that I know about technocracy is now reduced to print or to the internet. Technocracy.news, which is Technocracy News and Trends, is really the only website on the internet that offers a critical analysis of technocracy. Now, there are lots of other websites, of course, that speak about some of the issues, but this has been my mission from day one. We're now into, I think, maybe year 7 or 8 of providing this material, but I collect stories from all over the world that present the picture of technocracy, what it is, what it's like, what it's, you know, what it feels like, and what people are thinking. And I don't want to just write articles myself all the time and you listen to what I have to say about it. I like to do that, but that's not my point. My point is, I want people to see what the other side is saying about it. I want what the global elite are saying about it, what people like the Klaus Schwabs of the world are saying about it, because they're the ones that have the money to do it, and they're the ones that are actually doing it. So it's important for people to understand this is not some conspiracy theory that I have come up with or anybody else associated with me has come up with. This is absolutely hard, cold steel, so to speak. It's absolutely real, and this is what they are planning. I'm really reporting on it.
Yeah, and sometimes the things that are unfathomable, even unbelievable, turn out to be true. And I think in this case, this is exactly what we're talking about. Things like the Great Reset. Much of our audience is familiar with these terms and probably familiar with your work. I think I mentioned to you before, I also wrote a book a couple years ago, right before COVID, called How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State, trying to think of some solutions for this incoming technology.
Right. It's really a tough thing to consider how to.
Wrap up here and tell them about the event. Why would somebody who is maybe skeptical, but as I said before, open-minded, want to come to this Crimes Against Humanity tour to hear what Patrick Wood has to say?
Yeah, the only thing we're attempting to do, the four of us together, we're just attempting to put the evidence out so that you can make up your own mind. This is important in a country that still values free speech. At least the people do. The government doesn't, but we do. It's important just to have the facts on the table. We don't have an axe to grind, so to speak. But all of us, Dr. Judy Mikovits has been speaking out about this from day one when COVID first hit. She wasn't in the limelight before that, but she is now. Reiner Fulmisch from Germany, he wasn't in the limelight back then, but he is now, because he stood up and he says, there's something wrong here. And he started interviewing people and collecting the data that resulted in the grand jury of public opinion. You have Dr. Richard Fleming also. He wasn't in the news 5 years ago, but when COVID hit, he's a brilliant man. He's also a lawyer. He's a a nuclear cardiologist. I'm not quite sure what that is, but I'm going to ask him when I get there. But he's a brilliant guy, and he speaks so eloquently. We have evidence to present to the American people. That's our only intent. We want people to come and listen, and then you make up your mind and what you think about this whole thing. If you think our evidence is cracked, then fine. But if you think our evidence is grounded in fact, then you can decide what you want to do about it, if anything.
Is called the Crimes Against Humanity Tour. The Crimes Against Humanity Tour, crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. We'll put all that info below. And you can expect to hear more about that in the coming weeks in Freethinker Radio. We're trying to interview the different speakers who will be speaking in Houston on May 21st. So stay tuned. Thank you, guys. We'll be right back.
Shot.
Stupid idiot. That's what's up.
Idiot. Yeah. Welcome back to Freethinker Radio. Guys, you just heard an interview with Patrick Wood of Technocracy.News, Technocracy.News, if you want to learn more about him. And he's coming for the Crimes Against Humanity Tour, crimesagainsthumanitytour.com. That's our second interview with somebody from that event. There might be another one, but yeah, if you're in Houston and you're going to be there for the 21st and you want to know more about the evidence they're presenting related to COVID, and especially if you're listening, maybe you're skeptical and you think these people sound nuts, it might be worth your time to go check it out. But anyways, let's go ahead. We got a couple more stories before we wrap up for today. What we got, Micah? Let's get into it.
Well, it turns out that according to a government report that the FBI conducted 3.4 million data record searches in 2021. And this is in the U.S., not overseas. They did other stuff. I guess the FBI didn't, but the government, of course. So 3.4 million searches of data in the U.S. without a warrant over 2021. This is according to the annual Statistical Transparency Report published by the Director of National Intelligence. The information was previously gathered by the NSA. The U.S. Military Signals Intelligence Agency was transferred to the civilian-led FBI per the USA Freedom Act in 2015. Oh, I remember the Freedom Act. The figure represented a 260% increase from the previous coverage year of 2020, where the FBI then conducted a mere 1.3 million searches. Authority for the FBI's activity was cited as drawn from Section 702 of the FISA. That law, passed in 1978 during the Cold War, authorizes collection of private data, quote, by non-U.S. persons through their communications with U.S. citizens, and lawful permanent residents may be assessed as well. Section 702 has come under withering criticism from privacy advocates who claim it allows the federal government to spy on Americans with little oversight and due process. The last bill signed reauthorized it in 2018 and was openly questioned with its use of allegedly spying on presidential campaigns, et cetera, which reportedly open ongoing investigation. That year, the FISA court, created in 78 again, act to authorize warrants that rebuked the FBI for its handling of information gathered under the statute. Section 702's congressional authorization expires on December 31st, 2023, and experts anticipate a political fight for its reauthorization. So, you know, you can expect probably starting pretty soon, at the end of this year, if not sooner, to hear about, you know, why, you know, further justification for why Section 702, the Freedom Act, has to be there, why the FBI has to be able to spy on U.S. citizens without a warrant.
You know? I mean, so this is the FISA Act, Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. This has been a surveillance battle since it began, you know, since that court was created, and again, like since 9/11. And I think this one note that they say there is interesting, Micah, like you were kind of outlining, it says the report, despite everything, and people might hear that, like, oh my God, they did all these millions of data searches. The report does not suggest that the searches were illegal.
Nope.
It says that the FBI has this activity as drawing from Section 702, which again has been that created the FISA court, which is the secret.
You have to remember who wrote the
report. It's not illegal as long as that was there.
It doesn't claim it wasn't, but you have to consider who wrote the report. The report is written by the Director of Intelligence, a government report.
Of course, they're not going to say their own activity is illegal, but I just want to make that clear that, and again, this is the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, the so-called FISA Act. The FISA Act created the FISA courts, the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Courts, which are secret courts. Like, if you want to talk about a deep state, I think they're a pretty good example of what somebody might consider that term to be representative of. It's a secret court that the American people do not know the names of the judges. We don't know the names of when, the trials, the cases. Every now and then they might say, oh, well, the FISA court ruled on this thing, and you can see this redacted ruling from there. But, it's just, to me, that's the crazy aspect of it, right? And as you said as well, it's a government report, so they're not going to really exactly say, hey, we did something bad.
But the main thing, besides the 3.4 million, is that last sentence at the bottom. In 2023, it's up for reauthorization. So, you know, we've been talking about the spy state throughout this whole episode. And here's an example of, you know, it coming back around and also of its cost each year. You can bet those searches weren't free.
Yeah, and I think to what Patrick Wood was just talking about, this vision of this world of the Great Reset, technocracy, et cetera, many of the things that we're warning about, it is things like the FISA court and those sort of justifications, some which come after 9/11 and other incidents, that those are the kind of situations that are used to to build the technocracy, the so-called surveillance state. And part of that, another aspect of building a surveillance state, a police state, a big brother state, is to challenge any opinions that are not accepted, you know, and call it disinformation, call it misinformation, right? Those sorts of things. And that's what we're seeing now, Micah. I mean, we're seeing now the creation of this new disinformation governance board from the Biden administration. What's going on with this?
Oh, I mean, sorry.
It's for safety.
It turns out that this the existence of this board was, you know, came out just recently. And it was said that the DHS, you know, Department of Homeland Security, was standing up and setting up a new disinformation governance board to, quote, coordinate countering misinformation related to Homeland Security, focused specifically on irregular migration and Russia. So that's what, when they set it up, they said, and it's only recently been set up. And this is what the DHS Secretary Mayorkas said. However, he went further and said that almost immediately, just a couple of days later after it was set up, we have just established a mis and disinformation governance board in the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, we were talking about DHS for some years. Did we, you know, we thought this one was a little bit further away, but nope. It's here to effectively combat this threat, not only to election security, but to our homeland security. So see, it's already expanded the next time they talk about it. And when Jen Psaki defended Biden's new Ministry of Truth on Thursday, she went farther still, quote, "We know there has been a range of disinformation out there about a range of topics. I mean, including COVID, for example, and also elections and eligibility." Was Psaki announcing more responsibilities for the board beyond what they had reported and what had been said? It's hard to tell, as she sounded as if she was simply pointing out some of the areas in which supposed disinformation had circulated. However, she is the White House press secretary. What she says is generally the official line of the administration. If she didn't mean to say that the Disinformation Governance Board will be clamping down on what the administration's claim is disinformation about COVID and eligibility, we know that Mayorkas, that the board will be working against election disinformation. She will have to make an additional clarifying statement. Whether or not she does that, it's also true that Heinrich asked more details about what exactly the Disinformation Governance Board would be doing. Psaki professed not to have much information. "I really haven't dug into this exactly. I mean, we of course support this effort, but let me see if I can get some more specific." Professed to be surprised that anyone would oppose this new initiative. It sounds like the objective of the board is to prevent disinformation and misinformation from traveling around the country in a range of communities. I'm not sure who opposes that effort.
Oh my God.
It's pretty nuts to see this example. Just, I think, come on, it is a clear example of trying to control the narrative of what the people can see. And they're doing this as we're months away from the next midterm elections. Mm-hmm. And that's the big thing, is that they're trying to prepare for that.
Well, so
you're,
she,
like,
says
Patriot Act.
She's not sure who
could be in it.
Yeah, she's not sure who would oppose it. But, you know, perhaps we should start with those who realize that yesterday's disinformation, for example, there's no weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. Hunter Biden's laptop contains evidence of influence peddling with Joe Biden's involvement. It's today's breaking news. Last week, it was disinformation. It was false, right? How many times have we seen these type of stories, guys? Numerous times, right? Then there are those who are deeply concerned that the government will crack down on dissenting opinions under the guise of fighting disinformation. In short, anyone who understands the vital importance of freedom of speech will oppose the very existence of Disinformation Governance Board and be even more alarmed by the fact that it started out on focusing on alleged disinformation concerning illegal migration in Russia, and by the very next day had already apparently expanded its purview to include COVID, as well as elections and eligibility, in one day. Some of the critics of the new board are speaking out. Rather than police our border, Homeland Security has decided to make policing American speech its top priority. They're creating disinformation board. No, really. And take a look at the views of the radicals running it. And so, you know, some people are speaking about it in governance.
Should I refresh it?
You know, and some of the people themselves.
I think we got that whole story out there, though. Let me just close out tab. It's freezing on us. Yeah, I think that for me, what's craziest about this is that they're just becoming more blatant and blatant with the effort to control the narrative. Hopefully you guys could hear that last story as Michael was covering this important story about the new disinformation governance board being created by the Biden administration. And I don't think it spells anything good for the future of free speech and for accessing information and
whistleblowing. I mean, because come on, everything that comes out that we finally find out is true is labeled as misinformation in the beginning, it seems. I'm not, maybe not everything, but a lot of stuff is labeled as misinformation. And later we find out that, oh, by the way, these things were dangerous. Oh, by the way, there were no weapons of mass destruction. Oh, by the way.
Yep. It's another example of the same old thing. Guys, I think that's probably all of our time for today. This has been Freethinker Radio. Thank you to everybody who's been watching us live. Apologize if it's been a little bumpy on the way there, but we'll be doing these in-person shows, the three of us in person, this entire month of May. We're excited about that, so please stay tuned. And as Micah said earlier, if you want to send us music, send us music. You can broadcast your music across the Houston airwaves and on the Conscience Resistance Network. Check out the Crimes Against Humanity Tour. Check out thehoustonfreethinkers.com to find out more about our work. I think that's where we'll go ahead and leave it for tonight, guys. Anything else?
Live love. Love.
Peace.
Jawas wasn't even true. Ritualistic mass murder, deception, it ain't new. Cause the goal of the system is making a slave of you or the material. Things don't matter, they unfulfilling. What we really need to get to the root of what they concealing. They oppress us, suppress us, repress us like they possess us. Promise of progress and promising changes when they address us in our faces. So blatant, surrounded by their symbology. They shape the whole system and cultural anthropology. So bet your life. Sucks, not successful success. For my struggling people, the world's stressful.